Right, right.
So I always go visit him and sometimes spend the night there. So anyways, I dragged him down to me to come.
Okay, so
I dragged him because he was a speaker. I wanted him to come and sit at some meetings with these farmers, just because it says, look, they have this group, let's sit and talk about, particularly about cooperatives.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They look at cooperatives as good. I said, no, if they can get together, maybe knowing we're looking at a mine. I remember Save the Children supplying chickens and stuff, and there used to be these two, we used to call them, the Vietnamese used to call them Hai Ba Phap, which means two French women, who used to have these two older French women who were representatives of Save the Children Foundation in Saigon. I remember them, liked the little project we were doing with the chickens. I remember getting them to come over to where I was living out there to promote, and also with Vic there too, we have to talk to promote a project about a loan of money so they could buy some water pumps, some fertilizers to do the,
sure,
to do this rice. And the rice seed we could get, that was no problem. But it was the pumps and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got a loan of money and worked with two different farmer groups to buy a couple pumps, and they would share the pump. And basically, it was families again. Remember, just families sharing.
Sure, it works, it works.
And they had, and then to get the water, remember, they had to dig another trench from the river just to get the water a little more closer to the field, so then pump it out of the thing. I have some nice pictures of that. Before you go, I'll show it real quickly, just to give you a little visual. So Save the Children gave a loan, and the idea, and it had Vic mostly, because Vic was very good at this. I was good at the field technician, being out with the farmers all the time. I had Vic deal with where do we get the pumps from in this, go down to Saigon, come back.
Do the pricing and the purchasing and the loan stuff.
Also work with the bank at Chow Duck.
Yeah, work with the bank
about the loan, where the money gets paid back to, in this little farmer's buying cooperative.
Yeah.
Not a selling cooperative, that they can do on their own. They know
that. They know that. Yeah.
There's somebody to buy rice if you got rice. So we formed a nice little cooperative, whereby that third season that I was there, the third growing season, which I was able to be into because of the time frame I went there.
Okay.
That they a lot of these farmers started doing more green. I remember once driving down the road and looking at these fields being green. Yeah. With their rice. Right?
Yeah.
And like, their main concern while doing that, the main concern most of the time was growing sugar baby watermelons to get them to market first before Tet.
Yeah, yeah.
To make more money. So that's fine. You know, I could help out that way, but a little bit nutrition-wise, fertilizer-wise, and, you know, like, this is what you should do for this and that and that. And I still always trying to get them to do different crops, you know, diversify. But then we got really heavily involved with the rice production.
Yeah.
And I noticed that things, the rice worked out good, because I remember those same farmers that were eating the rice with a little bit of seaweed and a small patty fish, which was blue brownies, which are the fish that we raise as tropical fish here, which is kind of neat. That these guys, I remember the first season, I remember them having able to buy a radio. All right, and have a little bit more food. A bit. They were able to raise a few more animals. They were able to buy more animals to raise and sell them, so they had a little bit more meat. Then I noticed in the second year in, they had enough money to buy a little motorcycle, which means their sons on the off season can use it for a taxi type thing.
Yeah.
To make extra money. So I noticed that, and I said, wow, they are making money. Because it was always hard to figure out what was going on. We were more interested in getting into production thing. And after that, it was like a steamroll that people wanted to get involved in this growing of the rice. As soon as all the farmers saw it, everybody wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was leaving, and another guy was coming there to replace me. I don't know if he had an ag background. I can't even think of his name.
Well, you wouldn't have even met him.
Yeah.
Or if you did,
it would have been very brief. Yeah, he was there briefly as normal, just so I could introduce some things. But I don't know if he stayed there long.
Yeah.
a year or so then left and maybe couldn't take it, whatever. But I remember that was kind of interesting, that there was actually did something with that had results. You know, and IBS, which to me was just tremendous. And it was something I couldn't do by myself. It needed like Silvano there to really be an organizer at it.
You really worked like a team.
Yeah, and which is how we do still to this day, basically. Sure. Most of the stuff is done in teamwork.
Well, I think that guy who followed you, he wouldn't have stayed only a year anyway, because by then IBS was asked to leave Vietnam.
Yeah, I remember.
So it wasn't like he would.
Matter of fact, yeah, that's right. I think he had to leave after a year.
Yeah,
because I remember finding out that they had to abandon all those positions, because IBS was out again. Yeah, that's right. Because I was still in the country. I stayed there until about 72.
Right, right.
Yeah. What else?
Well, I had a couple questions. One, let's say a couple areas. One concerns IBS itself. Another one concerns AID.
Yeah, you say. Okay, that was what the questionnaire.
Yeah, I mean, because we're interested in seeing, now, we're interested in the relationship between IBS and AID. Now, to some extent, that's questions that I would ask somebody like a Danny Whitfield or a Hugh Mankey or a Don Luce. But then there's also volunteers who had to deal with them at the field level. And you had some negative things to say about it.
Nothing but, it's terrible, I did nothing but negative. That's also my philosophy of development work,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is for years, America always been doing development work in different ways, and even me growing up thinking, oh, development, we go there. Those people, we're much better than them, thinking wise, and we're much superior beings than them.
Yeah.
That no matter what we do, they're going to be so grateful, and we'll be Bwana. We'll be the king. You know, that's the thinking. And then, but I think from going down to Georgia and then going overseas, my thinking completely changed in that. Yeah, this also brings in the religion part of it too. That people are basically similar all over. You know, they're very similar. You know,
Or at least they have something similar.
Yeah, it's very similar. There's no superior thing. And people are in situations because of situations, whatever. You know, whatever. Who knows what the whole cosmos is and stuff. But I never looked at myself as much better than. Better, luckier, because American, you always figure you're luckier, but I never looked at them. I actually looked at them sometimes in envy, that, man, I'd love to live in that still house. and be there for a long period of time, meaning that let the waters lap up. It would be fun to jump off there, swim, and then do some growing. And I still have those dreams, like even being here. I don't grow any vegetables here because I got all these little farms set now. We got an acre and a half farm with the state parks that we run with students. We got these other projects throughout the state that. So we grow things there, but I still want a farm. Yeah, it's like maybe think about buying a small farm somewhere. Just need to farm again. But I was looking. I said, it would be nice to live like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I never looked at anybody being like better. But see, you say too. You know, I mean, my experience with them is all negative. I mean, first I never liked that stupid handshake with the.
I want all the bags of flour and
bulgur. Here you go, pat on the back.
The bulgur wheat symbol.
Yeah, here you go, here's this will make you happy, here's some flour, now what are you going to do with it? Now I see it on the black market being sold, the same flour, rebagged or whatever. So I never looked at that as a good use of resources. Except for, I mean, again, different, but then there's other organizations now that provide food in Africa when you have famine and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's lots of World Hunger Year, all these kind of things that get food where food needs is because they can't possibly, because of political turmoil, can't possibly do anything to better themselves as far as to become stable.
Yeah.
And then agriculture is stability. That's what we always look at. That's agriculture is looking at. It's like agriculture is the start of everything. So there, I always remember going, I was supposed to counterpart with a local Vietnamese guy who was like an extension because they gone. Yeah. You never see that. You know, that's it, they just had that position. But I remember the USAID people. First, I remember the people that used to go into USAID, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember one guy named John Van. Right? He was some kind of a big military colonel in the army. And then when he retired, then he went into USAID. I mean, while he was running things like a military organization. He was killed, in 1970, a helicopter crash with this famous French guy, author, photographer. Which I can't think of any other names. Remember him. I used to hate my guts.
This was John Paul Van.
Yeah,
hated your guts.
Yeah. Okay, he once. Yeah, that's right. I had a run-in with him.
How'd you have
this is the run-in. This is great, because I used to have to go get my mail, right? And and chowed up at wherever the APO, I can't remember.
Wait a minute. I think Minnick told me about this.
Probably, because he was the guy that I had to go there to go meet Van afterwards. But anyways, I'm coming in. I'm driving this motorcycle for 70 kilometers to get there. My hair was a little longer because I'm at the wild.
Yeah,
now I go here, but then I had pretty long hair.
That's right.
He saw me walk in there to get the mail. He just happened to be at that thing at the time. It was just a chance.
And you had sandals?
Huh?
You had sandals on?
Yeah, that's all I ever wore.
That's right.
And shoes, that's
right. Yeah, you had sandals, and your shirt was dirty, and you had shorts, and t-shirt, and your long hair.
Yeah, so I come in there just going.
That's right. You're the long-haired.
Yeah, that's me.
Wow.
Yeah.
IBS, wow, that's right. Okay, I was thinking it was somebody else.
No, that's me. They used to call me, well, in Oahu, it was always John, and sometimes they used to call me Tapiai, Mr. Longhair.
Yeah,
even though those guys had the long hair, but I just let it go. But anyways, I'd go in there just to get them. I used to always try to sneak in. And I never hung around with Americans whatsoever.
And before I let you finish this, you know, I'm doing good at stopping you to begin with, but another stopping. I remember John saying this very diplomatically, he said, you know, in all their ceremonies and relaxing, the Oahu enjoyed a good smoke, and so did
John.
So he fit right in.
Yeah, that was, what was it, Minnick, you mean?
No. Yeah. So Bob said, yeah, John fit right in.
So anyways, was running with yeah, John Paul Van, because he's named after the John Paul Jones.
Yeah. And he was furious.
He was a little guy, too, because he was even littler than me. I mean, height-wise, really? He used to wear clicks on his shoes.
For the ego thing?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
He was, when he walked, he'd hear the sound. But he happened to be right in there for some reason and just saw me, and he goes, oh, I'm so-and-so, I work on so-and-so. And he goes, oh, good to meet you. And then not realizing that he went and blew up right afterwards. Well, what's
he wanted
this guy
you
doing?
Out.
Yeah, what that. So I remember had to go into Chowed Up to go meet him. I remember going there with Minnick. I said, well, how are we going to do this? You know? So I just slipped my hair back and I wore a shirt and thing, and everything was fine. We met him, talked to him, and talked about our work there because he's always a favorite. And that was it.
Yeah.
It was just because he's military. He just blew up at the point. But see, he's a USAID guy at this point. He's not looking at the long range.
Or at least the cords kind of coordinator guy.
Yeah, cords.
Yeah.
And also, too, another guy that I used to have to work. I guess they used to hate me for some strange reason. Because it looks, I don't know.
Probably.
Yeah. And also that time period, the 60s, there's the anti-Vietnam stuff and things.
Sure, you were suspect.
Yeah. And there was another guy, that Mr. Tay was his name. T-E-H, Tay. He was, at that point, he had to be in his 40s. He's from Midwest, because I remember he had family back in the States, but he was a USAID. But he was another one of these, which kind of these people really formed my thinking of development as time goes on. Him, sometimes I had to go visit him, you know, just to find out what's going on and stuff, even though he discouraged it, never wanted to see me. He even accused me once of looking through his papers on his desk, which was, why would I do that? You know, just really crazy people, they're nuts. I think they're all, I get the, he would blow up at me for no reason whatsoever. So I kept away from those people. And the greatest experience was once, I really pissed them off once. And this is all by chance. I remember I was always out in the field. I was out in one of the villages with some farmers, and one guy's, oh, there's the guy, you said, I'm the blah, 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 that's coming down here. Because they gave us a little grain mill, kind of a thing to do some grain stuff, which is, okay, here, look at us. Here's your little grain, they'll now do something with it. Meanwhile, it immediately revolves into someone's private business, whatever. You know, it's not the way to develop something. You know, not just, the village chief will make sure that everything is fine with his grain. Right. Yeah, you know, you do things, you work in development, you work in other ways in development work. You know, all the players should be involved, but let's get participation.
The little grain mill comes last.
Yeah, that's, so I remember going, oh, really, he's coming? I remember standing there. And here comes the Jeeps and the big fanfare and Mr. T and the other Vietnamese counterpart extension. And I'm standing there with all the Vietnamese in the sight. He goes, well, he sees me, he flips. I'm just standing there with these other Vietnamese on the side of the road. I go, what am I doing here? Who invited me? It's like, what did I do? You know? And I just got such a kick out of that. Yeah, this coming with your big fanfare, you know. Meanwhile, I'm just doing my daily routines of visiting farmers. And
they're going out to the ceremony, so you join them.
Yeah. I got such a kick out of that afterwards, because I remember, hey, what am I doing here? You know.
What business is it of his?
Yeah, they. I don't know what's wrong with those people. I can still don't understand this. I can understand. I didn't look that bad, you know. I mean, I wasn't that. I mean, I was.
No, I knew some AID people in the Philippines too, and I thought they were jerks.
Yeah, yeah.
There were a few exceptions,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of them were just jerks.
Yeah, they.
I had one guy who's. Might pause this for just a second.
Mm-hmm.
Or just.
Yeah, so that's what Dylan. I had to have contact, but then I wanted in the beginning. You want to make contact. Because that's how you're doing. You know, well, these people are supposed to be doing.
Yeah, this is really this is your sponsor. Yeah,
and then still also just avoided them afterwards, and I even objected to even the way they live, their lifestyles.
Yeah.
Because they live in these air conditioned little Americas.
Yeah.
I go, what the
and
hell?
And have bridge games on the weekends.
Yeah.
And shit like that.
Yeah.
And only know Vietnamese because they're secretaries and gophers.
Yeah, yeah. So to me, how could some people, they said, then they get fat. Pink and fat. Yeah. Like, how do you get pink and fat when you're out there? You're supposed to thin down, you know.
You're supposed to be skinny as a rake and brown.
Yeah, because I got thinner then because you're studying heavy. That's how you survive, you know. I didn't have.
I lost 30 pounds in 1 month.
Yeah, well, it's important because that's how you survive.
My toes were brown.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Sam was all the time.
My toenails were brown.
Man, that was the experience that you say that they. I don't know right now. I don't know what you know like from then. I don't know what the hell you say doesn't. I mean, like, I haven't really keeping up with it. I'm more interested in other organizations that are doing development work. Like, a lot of friends I had work with a lot of those organizations, like the World Council of Churches,
mm-hmm.
World Hunger Year, Food for the World, Food for Survival. A lot of those things. Those, I know they're doing
more today.
Even say, they're more, not less, also doing, some of them are doing, like, World Council of Churches, my friends, he oversees a lot of projects that they're doing. You know, you look at a project that they're doing to make sure that it's a good project and it's continuing along, but it's usually taken in local hands to do that. Another friend actually just went back to Cambodia, actually got started with our program, with their gardening program, and his father was with Bread for the World, was that it? But now he was in Africa for a long time, overseeing projects. Now he just went to Cambodia. He just, a couple months ago, just got transferred to Cambodia, and his family, the whole family there. This is a good experience, it was hot. Much different than Africa where he's living in the hills to oversee projects. So I don't even look at USAID or what's going on with them now. I just don't think any sponsored government agency program like that is effective outside of the handout stuff like that. But as far as development stuff, I would look at the more private, the more rural organizations to do.
The only way they could be helpful is if they were a government granting agency to NGOs.
Yeah, okay, that's where you could look at.
Where you can take the money from the government
and use
it efficiently through NGOs.
Yeah, I can see
how. And there's a need for that. I mean, because there is so much need overseas.
Oh, for good basic development work.
Yeah.
Economic development, community development. We look at it now as economic development as compared to community development. I mean, economic development in counties, even in New York State, has taken on a new trend, too, is that they now look at, some counties look at community economic development, they look at agriculture as that.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning when years before, economic development, getting this factory here to provide employment, not a lot of counties actually...
It's more holistic.
Yeah, now a lot of counties in New York State, because of the decline of farms, are looking at to redevelop farms again, to get them going, and that means maybe money's for small farms, because you can make it a bit in small farming now in New York State. Mm-hmm. If you're doing direct marketing, farmers markets.
Yeah.
That's where my program comes in.
Tom Wickham, who was before you in Vietnam, but he's on Long Island. And
Wickham?
Yeah. Way out in
Riverhead?
Chautauqua or something like that.
Sagerties.
No,
in Long Island, huh?
Yeah, just almost where you get the ferry to go over to
Connecticut.
To Connecticut.
Orient Point.
Yeah,
Green Point.
Greenport. Just before that, just a little bit before that.
Yeah, it's Greenport.
And he's got his
what's he do?
His stand. His parents and his grandparents have always had a stand, right?
Oh, his name's Wickham. Oh, Wickham Farms. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know the farm. I didn't realize the IVS.
Yeah.
No kidding.
And he worked at Erie too.
Huh.
Yeah.
I can remember that next time I'll have that.
Yeah. Yeah. Drop in and see Tom.
Jeez, Tom Wickham. He was maybe before our time.
Yes, he was. He was. He was. And he had served actually first in Cambodia. When that closed
they
down,
they tossed him out. Yeah,
yeah. They.
Yeah. He another guy worked. Another guy that was in our group too. I can't think of his name, but he married a mountaineer girl. Mm-hmm. What was his name? He was in Cambodia then. Came back and worked in Vietnam. What else? Oh, so I look at the, you said. Oh, actually, I didn't put in the because this is looking at a social study. Linda is my second wife. My first wife was Vietnamese.
Oh, really?
I was married in 1970. Vietnamese girl came out of, actually met her in Lom Sui, but because her family had a house there and one in Saigon. Her father was a lawyer or something like that. And we were married, lived, then we came back to the States in 73, but then we kind of separated in 76. Okay. Three, 4 years. She's doing fine here. She actually, I believe she's doing Buffalo, owns houses there. Is part of a M Wild company as a floor supervisor. Got managed to get her family over here. They're all in California. Uh-huh. Her brothers, who have been my brother-in-laws, all graduate engineering degrees, are doing fine.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
And she's fine. So that's well, look at the social. Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Oh, yes. A wife. Yes. Yeah.
Well, we had no kids. So
yeah.
Well, so that's why I know.
I kind of fortunate in a way.
Oh yeah, yeah. It would be 73, 83. Holy, they'd be like.
Maybe college.
Maybe
college.
Oh, wow, I wouldn't have this house.
Right? They would, yeah, right. You wouldn't
actually,
have the house.
Actually, my wife was, first wife was doing better, did better than me.
Sure.
Because I remember when we got divorced, we had roughly about $10,000 in the bank. And she took seven of it, and I had three to get started with in New York City. Mm-hmm. And actually, she owned the house way before. She did much smarter person. But anyways.
Yeah, we're getting close to time, because I've got to get going pretty soon, because I've got to be.
At 1?
At 1 o'clock on the west side.
You should make it pretty quick. You know.
Yeah, well, I just want to be real sure.
All right, so then, so you said, so I mean, that's my experience of you said. I just, well, I don't look at, and I really think too, it's because it seems like every character I ran in with you said was something strange, but I think they support the demise of an organization like that when it could go into other directions. Mm-hmm. And some of the things I see now with Extension here, like not. Cooperative Extension in New York State, but in New York City, we have some directors who want to have a point to prove instead of looking at taking all the players involved. And I think that's what I was with you said. And it's right that the best thing is, if you had government has money to distribute it to the NGOs that are doing project work based on projects that they're doing stuff.
Yeah, not just building an organization. Yeah.
So you said, it was to me, when I was there, again, it was the 60s, there were these other people like coming in with the car, here comes the cars in to go, here we give you this grain mill, now become wonderful and don't become communists or whatever.
Yeah.
It was most of the work then was to, if you could get the farmers happy and making money, then they won't become communists.
Yeah.
Or VC, whatever. Yeah. Which it makes sense, but they always approached it. I always looked at the wrong way. I always looked at the really grassroots level stuff. It was just me, but that's I still do that.
Yeah.
I still spend most of my time with Extension. Is I'm on this group over here. I'm over in this area over here. This area like that.
Let me shift a little bit though, because when you came in, you're coming in June, I think you said July, something like that, '68.
Yeah,
June, July, August. You know, the IVS is like a lot of organizations has gone through this fundamental shakeup because of the Tet Offensive, and lots of volunteers leave. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy I talked to yesterday, Bill Serile, he left in April because his assignment was, just really scrubbed. Kanto was no longer, his school was now a refugee site.
Yeah.
You know, so I talked to Danny Whitfield, who was director, mm-hmm. and he had been since only September or maybe October of 67, so he hasn't been around for very long. And he had to deal with morale problems after the resignations, and then he's got to deal with the Tet Offensive. And then he's got more volunteers coming in.
Yeah.
Did you have much interaction with IVS officials, and how did they seem to you in terms of providing what you needed as a volunteer?
Oh yeah, see that's what's what IVS was different. I liked everybody in it.
Uh huh.
Yeah, and I don't know what a lot of them thought about me, but I'm a friendly guy also. If you know me, then it's a different story. But with all those people, I liked. And they always supported us. I mean, they were there. They supported. They did everything for support. I always looked at it as they, because I don't know about these things, meaning that administrative and how they support the field. I know about it now after many years of working.
Right.
But everything ran smooth. Whenever you needed assistance or anything, there was always everything was fine. They took care of your passports. They took. Oh, we're going to go take a trip, Cambodia. Okay, we'll get the visas. I mean, that administrative wise was great.
Okay.
But also in their philosophy, remember at that time too, these guys, particularly Don Moose, I mean, who just left the organization, the whole anti, it was a very, and everybody there was really, I remember that Japanese guy that came in too, very anti, not anti-government, but you know, anti-anti. It was really left wing. Let's say that, we can't say anti-government. Even though the Japanese guy was very anti-American government, Japanese government. But most of us were that of that era of the 60s.
Yeah.
And that social-minded. I remember the ones that weren't. I remember there was one older guy that came in when our group decided he was a farmer. And he was in his 40s or 50s. He was going to kill eight. He just quit after a quick while because it was just so... Everything was just... First of all, he couldn't... Very tough to... That southern accent to speak Japanese. You know, with,
oh, he was from the South.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. But he also left right away because it wasn't the Peace Corps that he maybe was thinking that he could be useful in if it was early 60s as compared to late 60s.
You may be very, very right.
Yeah. So a lot of those guys left, especially because everybody there was really, I mean.
And that's an important point you just made.
You talked to a good deal, and particularly the ones that are around 67, 68, 69, you know, they're all pretty were rabble rousers of the time period kind of thing. And you'll see that most of the people you talk to, that kind of comes out. And that was basically the group older, like all of them. They're all like a bunch of characters. We used to have a good time together.
And that's a very different personality from the early ones who were 58, 59, 60, 61, 62.
Which is also who you'll be meeting shortly, the one that Beth or whatever her name is.
Anne.
I remember she's...
I think she was probably education, though.
Yeah, she was a little bit ahead of me, too. I remember she had very short hair, a very thin girl. All right, so you see her now, you may see a little lady, I don't know.
Oh, if it's a very thin person?
Yeah.
That, I think, I'm going to just guess, that you saw a picture of a woman named Marge Caldwell.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, and I saw her, I interviewed her. She's still extremely thin.
Yeah.
And she's now the chair of the Department of Nutrition and Food Science at University of Rhode Island.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. They're still in that.
Yeah, yeah. Which is great.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're involved too. Our thing is all food and nutrition.
But who in the IVS organization worked with you? Was it Minnick who you had most?
Minnick was my when we had to go out. He was the area guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever they used to call it, I don't know. He was the for that region.
Right.
It was Minnick, and he was in about his third year because he lived in Kanto. He used to have to go. He'd come and visit me. Well, he'd come visit me a lot. We had a great spot for
him. Yeah. He seemed to like a lot of things that were going on there. Yeah.
So he was the main person, and then he left. I don't know if he had anybody after that.
Probably did, but did anyone from the Saigon office ever come around and visit?
Yeah, one guy. Well, the one guy they really didn't care for too much. He went from there to Africa. His name was Richard or Dick. Short name. Peters, Richard Peters.
Dick Peters. Okay.
Yeah, is that who it is?
It could be. There was a Dick Peters who was involved in some administration. I'm not sure if it was that time.
He would come out, but he was bullshit. He was like, he's, you know, afterwards that I noticed, because I got a note for where I found out he's worked in another organization in Africa, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of these, you know, see, now they got this like hard copy. But, you know, one of these guys that climb the ladder, you know.
Okay.
And they'll do things to embarrass you, because he tried to embarrass me a couple times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Which I don't like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's, you don't do that, you know. Just mm-hmm. you know, social contact, you know, just don't do that. He was about doing it, but he would come over, because that's right, he stayed in our place where I lived in Wahard, because mm-hmm. whenever, because we were talking about to look at some projects or some things, and then I remember seeing him once back in Washington when I came back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he was the head of IES there then, at that point. And then he left and...
Yeah.
But otherwise, everybody else that was in country was all right. I mean, the only strange ones was Hugh Mankey. Hugh was, was it Hugh? Yeah, it was Hugh, yeah. He had a problem here we go, learning the language. It used to frustrate him, I remember.
That's no big deal.
Yeah,
yeah, everyone's got problems.
Couldn't understand what he's saying. Well, that's the way it goes. You got the tolerance, you know, you got the taste. Yeah. But he was kind of strange. But he was all right. He was strange. But he's a lawyer now, right?
That was his quirk.
Yeah. He's a lawyer now.
That's
fine. He's doing it.
I don't know if that's.
It was very. The ones that.
Mm-hmm.
That something was wrong with him, I always thought that. They left. You know, they went away. You know. They used to have a term. We used to call it. Bagging in the field. I don't know if we got it from Vietnam, because
bagging in the
when
field.
You're dead, you'd be put into a bag.
Uh-huh.
We used to call it bagging in the field. Means that you started off doing like way out in the boonies, doing, you know, you're doing field work, right?
Yeah.
And after you just couldn't take it. It's like putting you in the bag and then dropping you on administration's door. So a lot of people who bagged in the field became the Saigon, and somehow administration in Saigon, and then a lot of them became administration in Washington, which is fine, because that's their role, all right?
Mm-hmm.
They got a little taste of it, but as long as they don't try to, because I have this problem with extension in the city now, as long as, as long as they don't try to impose what they feel is the way to do things, all right?
Yeah.
As an administration and as a leader like that, you guide, you help and assist, but you don't try to put your own imposed things about how things should be done. So fortunately, these guys who bagged in the field never really, you know, it's like, this is how you do it.
By bagged the field, you mean if you bagged in the field?
You never spent 2 years out in the field.
You
connived your way to get.
You were only there like about a year, maybe a little bit.
Yeah. And that's how you somehow connived your way to, either you quit bagging it, you quit and just left completely, or what I would say bagging the field also meant to, you became part of administration somewhere.
Yeah.
That you
got a big jump up right away.
Yeah. And I always just, I said, how do they do that? Because I don't think that way. You know, it's like, I always thought that
you
someone with a magic wand.
First.
Yeah, magic wand will come and say, we choose you for this position. Not knowing that, because they come out of their working class family, right? Is that you don't strive.
You don't think about self-promotion.
Yeah. You don't go, things I've learned later in life. Like even when coming back from Vietnam, it took a little bit to get a job because I didn't know how to promote myself.
Oh, one of the most difficult things I've had to do is to learn how to write a resume.
Yeah. I didn't know how to promote or where to look. And meanwhile, there's people that know how to do that perfectly.
Yeah.
How to get their kiss ass, as the term would be, to get into.
They have something legitimate, but it's one thing, and they blow it up like it's 10.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you do two or three things like that, and you forget about them. Because you're doing them all the time.
Yeah, it's no big deal. Yeah. To them, they blow up a project that never really was anything.
Yeah.
And I go, that's nothing. Yeah. Like, but they blow it up as a big deal and stuff.
I mean, I know our time's growing real short, but I've got to describe one person I know who's like this. It's completely irrelevant to IBS, but so I'm going to pause it. But there's a...
Promote it, which I never...
I turned this back on now. But yeah, but some people, you get to smell them after a while.
Yeah. Sometimes we had that with IBS as far as... Just some that... Especially that I remember one guy that could IBS, and all of a sudden I find out he's working with... For a while he was working in administration in Washington. I said, man, these people... I wonder what he possibly did.
Yeah.
Because all he did when he was there was complain and bitch and moan.
What did he do to deserve this?
Yeah. And it always shocks me because, you know, I grew up in that time period.
Yeah.
I figure that, oh, someone will, well, you're doing good work, let's promote you to that. And that doesn't really exist even right now while everybody else with extension moves on to all these greater, I don't care to be in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But no one's ever come up and said, oh, we need you to do this program, or we're going to give you this. Anybody who ever got any program somehow can argue the way to do it.
Yeah.
So my whole thing, like what I find enjoyment doing now, is basically program development.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like new and neat programs. And it's basically finding out what's out there that people want done, which is where that new farmers to markets thing, where their urban horticulture program evolved to the urban agriculture program. You know, it's how it's done.
Well, the phone's ringing, but that's not, they'll get that downstairs.
Yeah.
But it's now 10 after.
Yeah. Gonna...
And I'm getting a little nervous about getting over to Central Park.
Yeah, you'll make it.
Yeah, but I better leave, I think.
Yeah, all right.
To make it, I better leave.
Yeah, with the train, you'll make it pretty quick. Yeah.
Okay.
So is there any, you want to see a couple pictures real quick?
Sure, and I first like, thank you for your time today.
Sure. If you got anything else any other time, just email, give a call.
Yeah, we're,
next time.
I mean, I've got your email thing, and there's mine.
Oh, okay.
I just write it in on the bottom. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to turn this thing off now.
Yeah, okay.